just a little more than 2 weeks since launching its new chicken sandwich, Popeyes announced on Tuesday that it has run out of the extremely popular offering, which ignited a chicken war with rival Chick-fil-A and became a viral sensation. In a statement, the fast food chain said, quote, Popeyes aggressively forecasted demand through the end of September and has already sold through that inventory. Demand for the sandwich soared after Chick-fil-A caught wind of Popeyes' new offering. This back and forth caught the attention of fans of both fast food chains, which led to long lines at Popeyes stores across the country.
The ExoMars rover is the second part of the ExoMars mission, and the main science goal is to look for life on the surface, or more specifically under the surface of Mars, where we think there could be organic molecules in this sort of layer of permafrost that's down there. So the reason why we want to take samples from below the surface is because we think the top sort of meter and a half is subject to its radiation effectively. So we don't think life will want to live in this layer. Instead, it'll be just below it. So we've got a drill that can take samples from 2 meters below the surface.
Bargaining over who should get which job is putting talks to form a new coalition government in Italy at risk, an opposition party spokesman said on Tuesday. And that raises the prospect of early elections that could favour Italy's right-wing League party. For voters, it demonstrates why there's a lack of faith in the ruling class. The crisis began after League leader Matteo Salvini declared a 14-month-old coalition with the anti-establishment Five Star Movement broken and called for snap elections.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It is August the 28th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Here we are, another business day getting underway. Lots to cover today here on the program. Shiraz Mian will be with us from Zacks Equity Research. The quarter two earnings season coming to an end. We'll look at the scorecard, see how companies did with that. Also, check in on Shiraz to see maybe where some of the good buys might be in a volatile market these days. We'll bring in Shiraz momentarily here this morning. First up on the Opening Bell today, a little bit later in the program, you may have seen SpaceX test its new Starhopper machine yesterday, a rocket spaceship in the Texas desert. There is some new information about how humans might be able to withstand space travel, not only on long-distance space trips, but even locally, maybe to the space station as well. We'll talk about how our guts are being impacted by what's going on in space. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning. One of the lead researchers on some new science out of Northwestern University will be with us later in the program. And, of course, we'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour as well, right here on 720 WGN. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the opening bell rings this morning after a warning from the bond market drove down stocks yesterday. As recession fears returned to Wall Street, the spread between the 10-year Treasury yield and the 2-year rate fell to negative 5 basis points, the lowest level since 2007. The so-called yield curve inversion has been an accurate forerunner of past recessions. Bank shares fell across the board as a result, the Citigroup dropping nearly 2%. Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase were both down more than a percent. Shares of Johnson & Johnson were up nearly 2% despite the company losing an opioid case in Oklahoma. The outcome of that case, the $572 million ruling, was far less than what prosecutors were asking for, far less than what investors were expecting as well. Yesterday, the Dow wiped out a 155-point gain to close the day down nearly 121 points. The Nasdaq fell 27. The S&P fell 9. This morning, we see a little bit of positivity on the market, but not a whole lot. Dow, Nasdaq, and S&P futures are all up about a quarter of a percent this morning. Dow futures are up about 54 points. As we look around the rest of the world, markets in Europe are generally in the red. In Germany, off by nearly a half a percent. In France, off more than a half a percent. In Asia this morning, we're seeing a little mixed market as well. In Hong Kong, lower by about a quarter of a percent. In China, lower by about a third. Japan ending the day in the green, just barely a little bit there. This morning, crude oil is at $55.75 a barrel. In the United States. We have a couple of stories as we begin this morning. First, Deutsche Bank says it has financial documents, including tax returns, related to House Democrats' attempt to get financial records belonging to President Trump, his family, and his business. The bank filed court papers acknowledging it had relevant documents but didn't go into detail about them. The president and his family are trying to block the bank from complying with subpoenas from two House committees who are working to get a hold of Trump's personal and business tax records. Purdue Pharma is offering to settle opioids lawsuits across the country by paying $10 to $12 billion. NBC News confirms that the potential deal was discussed by Purdue's attorneys and owners, the Sackler family, in a confidential meeting last week. Pharmaceutical company facing more than 2,000 lawsuits claiming the company sales practices and deceptive marketing helped to sustain the opioid crisis. This comes after a federal judge ruled yesterday that Johnson & Johnson must pay that $570 million in that Oklahoma case. Former Google and Uber executive says he's not guilty of stealing self-driving car trade secrets. The U.S. Attorney's Office in San Jose charged Anthony Lewandowski with theft or attempting to steal confidential files from Google subsidiary Waymo. If convicted, he could face the maximum sentence of 330 years in prison for 33 criminal counts against him. Let's begin this morning with the Q2 earnings season scorecard. Joining us this morning, Shiraz Mian, Director of Research at Zacks Equity Research. Shiraz, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Yeah, glad to be back, Steve.
Quarter two is pretty much coming to an end, the earnings season, that is. Give us the headline scorecard.
So results turned out to be good enough, not great, but not bad either. Not much growth in earnings was expected, and we got a shade better than that. Earnings were a little bit in positive territory, up about 0.4%. Relatively stronger growth on the top lines, close to 5%. 76% beat earnings estimates, close to 58% beat revenue estimates. These numbers aren't great, but as I mentioned, the expectations were on the weak side as well. And the worry in the market all along was, Steve, that as this earnings season unfolds, companies would across the board provide negative guidance for Q3 and beyond, which would put big pressure on estimates for the second half of the year and beyond. We did see some companies guide lower, but that across the board negative guidance fear did not pan out. And that, in my judgment, was the reassuring and positive aspect of the Q2 earnings season.
Shiraz, what's at play there? I know we've been talking a lot about trade. That's probably in there as well. But what would you say is the reason why some of these companies are not as negative as we thought they would be?
It's the U.S. consumer. So the fact that we have a strong labor market, there is evidence that wages are going up, confidence in the households, consumer confidence still remains high, even though it has pulled back a little bit. That is driving the corporate sector, that is driving sales. In fact, the U.S. consumer is the strongest one variable, not just in the U.S. economic backdrop, but the entire global backdrop. And even though the industrial and manufacturing sector, the business sector, has weakened and softened a little bit in the U.S., I'm talking about, the strength and the robustness in the consumer side of the scale is more than offsetting that.
Yeah, and so as we move forward here, that's a good area to keep watching. If something happens with consumers that we all of a sudden see that change, that would be a warning for the larger market for investors overall, wouldn't it?
That's correct. Yes, the consumer, any sign of weakness there would be a big warning for the U.S. economy and also, as I mentioned, the global economy.
The forward guidance that we thought would be a little bit more negative and wasn't speaks to the optimism of the business community, doesn't it? I mean, despite all that we've been hearing about trade and tariffs, The business community still remains pretty optimistic about the economy moving forward.
It is. So there is uncertainty in the business community, which is impacting their spending plans. And we see that in the aggregate numbers for the economy of capital expenditures and other spending by businesses and corporations as a whole. But on the whole, you're correct. The business community sees the outlook for the U.S. economy stable. As we pointed out earlier, the strength in the households and the strength in the consumers, it is that momentum that the business community across the different sectors and industries can see as well, and that's really driving some of the optimism you're referring to.
As we look further into the scorecard, the retail sector, technology, finance, all were pretty good. I'm surprised by the retail numbers here because we just always keep hearing about the retail apocalypse, but there was a pretty good quarter too, wasn't there?
It was. So the retail, the issues there, Steve, have been longstanding. And as we all know, the migration of sales to the digital and online medium has created excess capacity in the U.S. retail sector, and it's now a question of execution, and it's company by company. So in some areas, we saw really good performance. So whether it's Walmart and Target, whether it's Home Depot and Lowe's, and obviously the online vendors, the more apparel-centric players, the department stores, they are still struggling. They don't seem to have a compelling business proposition still. And we saw a number of those companies still struggle to respond effectively, and it's a hit and miss on that side of the business.
For the technology sector, total earnings down nearly 6.5%, 6.3%. What's going on with technology?
So technology as a whole is doing good, but there are pockets within the broader technology space that are going through a cyclical downturn, in particular the semiconductor industry within the broader technology space has been going through a weaker patch. And semiconductors, these are the chips that drive our computers and smartphones and even automobiles now and a whole bunch of industrial machines. They account for about a sixth of the technology sector earnings. The outlook for semiconductors has improved, but on a year-over-year basis, earnings in semiconductors are still down 25% to 30%. It is expected to be weak in the September quarter as well. But once we pass that, then the deceleration would have plateaued, and the expectation is that in Q1 or Q2 2020, we should have growth resume in the semiconductor space as well. Beyond semiconductors, there's a lot of growth and momentum in the technology space.
Charles, I wanted to mention briefly, we've started to see some quarter three earnings out. The estimate there is a little bit different than quarter two.
That's correct, yeah. So typically what happens is that as we get to the starting point of a new quarter, estimates really come down. And that's what we are seeing for the September quarter as well, Steve. So the expectation now is that earnings for Q3 would be down about 4.5%. This is down from 3 months ago when the expectation was for about a 1% decline in earnings. As bad as it looks, it actually isn't in relative terms that bad compared to what we saw for the June quarter and also what we saw for the March quarter. As we discussed earlier, the fear in the market was that we will have across the board negative guidance, which will really push down estimates for Q3. My personal fear, worst case fear, was that we will have 8-9% decline by now in Q3. So relative to those fears, it isn't a bad picture in terms of growth currently.
So as we look at both of these the final numbers pretty much from Q2 and looking at Q3, what's the play here, Shiraz, for investors? What would the advice be? I mean, are there some good buys in some of these companies or should investors be cautious moving forward?
I think there's plenty of good buys. The fears, the exaggerated fears, tied to the trade issue, tied to the duration and length of the economic cycle, and I'm referring to all these bond market moves, has really spooked investors. And relative to the last 6 to 9 months, even as back as 12 months, I would say, many good industries have solid stocks that are trading at very good levels across the board in a variety of sectors. So there's plenty of good buys in finance and technology and retail in the business area. So I would caution investors to be mindful of their risk tolerance as long as they are long term, as long as they can. They can tolerate the stomach churning day to day volatility. I would say they should stay in the market and stay invested.
Well, Shiraz, we appreciate your expertise and insight and analysis as always. Thanks for getting up with us this morning.
Glad to be with you, Steve.
Shiraz Mian, Director of Research at Zacks Equity Research. You can find the latest earnings scorecard at Zacks.com. And more data and investment research as well. Again, Zacks.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Wednesday here on The Opening Bell. A prototype of SpaceX's next-generation rocket took to the skies yesterday over South Texas, reaching a height of a small skyscraper before landing back on Earth. The flight demonstrated the vehicle's ability to take off and land in a controlled manner as it paves the way for more aggressive testing of the vehicle's design in the months ahead. The vehicle, known as the Starhopper, could be at the center of future spaceflight, specifically to Mars, the Moon, and Mars. And as we prepare for long-duration space flight to places like Mars, scientists are busy figuring out how the human body will react to it all. And one of the lead researchers on some new science involving how humans and the human body's reacting in outer space is at Northwestern University. And we're happy to have her with us this morning, Martha Vita Kerna, a research professor with the Department of Neurobiology at Northwestern, on with us today. Martha, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's exciting to think that humans are getting ready, that maybe we're a step closer to going into space and traveling longer distance. The questions that have been in your world lately is how the human body is going to react to all of that. Talk to us about some of the research that you've been doing and why it's important.
Wow, that's a big question, why it's important. It's important for a number of reasons, I would say. We need to anticipate and prepare for longer duration missions. Obviously, we want to keep our astronauts and space travelers safe. But I think there's also benefits for understanding just how the human body responds to challenges in general that would be very applicable on Earth as well.
So the science that you've been working on specifically, we all remember the twins, twin astronauts. Scott Kelly was in space on the International Space Station while his twin Mark Kelly was back here on Earth. And the physiological changes in both men were studied during a long-duration trip. You specifically looked at how the gut reacts, how microorganisms in the gut react to space travel. What did you find?
Right. So the Northwestern, really Chicago group, we also had collaborators at Rush University and University of Illinois at Chicago involved in this. But our team was studying the gut microbiome, that is the communities and microorganisms living inside the gut, and followed Scott Kelly both before, during, and after his one-year mission, as well as his brother Mark for the same duration of time. We found some surprises. One of the things that we expected at the outset was that there might be a loss in diversity of bacteria living inside the gut during space, because it's a very confined, limited environment. The astronauts are provided very nutritious but very clean, prepared food, and we just thought that there might be a loss of bacterial diversity given those situations. And actually what we saw was no decline in diversity whatsoever. That's not to say there was no change. We did observe a change in the ratio of the major phyla, that's broad categories of bacteria, where there was a shift towards more bacteria of a group called Firmicutes and a decrease in the bacteria in a group called Bacteroidetes.
I was just going to interject and say that, you know, from a human level, I mean, we need these microorganisms in our stomachs to process food and to really, it's quite important to life. And I know there was some concern about what role space radiation might have played, but that wasn't a factor at all, was it?
Well, this more recent study that we've just published was looking at mice, and we looked at fecal samples, I hope I'm not grossing anybody out this early in the morning, of mice that spent a little over a month on the International Space Station, compared with ground control animals that were fed the identical diet, housed in the identical habitats, and saw significant changes in the gut microbiome. And some of those changes looked like what we saw with Scott Kelly, actually. We saw the same increase in the Firmicutes to Bacteroidetes ratio. We then went on to analyze what does that look like, what does that change look like that we can study on Earth. And one of the things we looked at was radiation, and radiation has a big effect on the gut microbiome, but it doesn't look like the same effect as what we saw on the International Space Station.
Does the research suggest that there needs to be any kind of protection or any kind of changes or any adaption going forward if we're to do some of these long duration space trips to protect what's happening in the gut or to promote something to happen in the gut that's not currently happening?
Well, it's definitely important to consider what's happening in the gut because, as you mentioned, we are very dependent on the bacteria in our gut to help us digest our food and to produce all kinds of metabolites that our bodies can't produce themselves. And the gut microbiome has been associated with all kinds of health conditions, from obesity to metabolic disorders to psychiatric conditions have been associated with changes in the gut microbiome. This is still a developing field, though, and so we aren't really in a position where we know necessarily which changes are adaptive and might actually be helping somebody adapt to something like space flight as opposed to being harmful. So I would say that's sort of where the stage of research is right now, is we're just trying to understand, well, what is the change and what's the possible significance of that change? And is it harmful, or is it actually helping things?
The important thing is here, you're getting more information, and that's probably easier said than done, isn't it? I'm guessing you'd want to see more research sooner than later.
Well, yeah. I think it's an interesting question, too. It seems to me that the gut microbiome is influential in many aspects of your health and function, and we want to understand that better.
Yeah. I know that with Scott Kelly, when he came back and was examined, there was he did have some changes in there was some bone loss and some other physical issues that were noted during that year-long in space. So it did impact him in other ways. Is it possible that what the kinds of research you're working on, some of these things interact in a way that we just haven't studied yet?
Yeah. That's very much a focus right now. That's something we can also address further with our animal studies, where we can look in parallel, like what the different teams did with Scott Kelly, but in a more controlled manner. We can look in parallel at what's changing in multiple organ systems.
Are you hopeful that humans will be able to withstand space travel? I mean, if we're to go to Mars and other places, do you think humans, based on what we know now, will be able to withstand some of this stuff?
I think it looks very encouraging that we would be able to withstand this, and with more research like what we're talking about today, I think we'll be able to get there, yeah.
All right, very exciting. Well, we appreciate you being on with us and sharing your research with us. We're going to link out to some of it, too, so that our listeners can get more details. But we thank you for getting up with us this morning.
Well, thank you.
Martha Viterna with us, a research professor at the Department of Neurobiology at Northwestern University.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, looks like it's going to be a flat opening on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are up just fractionally this morning. Same story, really, at the S&P and NASDAQ. NASDAQ futures up 5 points, S&P futures up 3 points, NASDAQ futures up 18 points. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, day number one of the 2019 Farm Progress Show is history, and it was a pretty good show, pretty good crowd for the day. And today we're expecting an even bigger crowd because Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will be on the program, along with several state directors of agriculture who will be touring the show today. Yesterday, Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, visited the show, and when Max Armstrong and I asked him what would be the most critical issue when Congress comes back from its August recess, he said, well, trade, of course, but he said also there will be concern over where we find the markets that we have lost during this trade practice between China and the United States. Yesterday in the grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade, prices were lower because of the improvement in crop conditions. Soybeans dropped 1% to 8.59¼ a bushel. Corn down 0.6%, 3.66¼. Wheat rose 0.5% to 4.76¾ a bushel. Lean hog futures crumbled under the weight of large supplies and a lack of news about trade talks with China yesterday. Cattle futures also weakened in the day's trade. So today, another day that we'll be watching any progress in trade negotiations, and we'll also be looking at a good day at the Farm Progress Show. Weather forecast is ideal. I'll be flying down in Air Orion shortly. Look forward to seeing a lot of you on the ADM stage in the entertainment building. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. The former New York Fed President Bill Dudley calling on the central bank not to help President Trump fight his trade war with China. In a sharply worded commentary to his one-time colleagues, Dudley urged Fed officials not to lower interest rates simply as a backstop while the president continues his tit-for-tat tariff battle with the Chinese that has escalated in recent days. The commentary said central bank officials face a choice: enable the Trump administration to continue down a disastrous path of trade war escalation, or send a clear signal that if the administration does so, the president, not the Fed, will bear the risks. Roku's streaming business is growing faster than Netflix did at a similar stage in the company's life. That's according to an analysis at William Blair. The firm says it expects Roku to reach 80 million active accounts by 2025. The company says in its view that Roku will experience similar phase stages of international growth, just like Netflix did during its international expansion. Shares of Roku, which sells its own streaming devices with thousands of channels and provides an operating system that smart TVs have been on a tear with this year, climbing nearly 370% over the last several months. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, August the 28th. Not a lot on the calendar today. We'll get mortgage applications from the Mortgage Bankers Association. The State Street Investor Confidence Index is out. The EIA Petroleum Status Report due as well. Fed speakers out as well. Mary Daly among them. And earnings pretty much trailing off from the second quarter. Not a lot on the calendar this morning. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, August the 28th.